All right. Well, good afternoon, everyone. It is 1:34 p.m., Wednesday, August 5th, 2020. I'm Commissioner Brian Crotchis, joined by Commissioner Randy Christman, and we will have a third commissioner. Commissioner Julie Fedorchuk had something that came up that she needed to attend to, but she will be in hopefully shortly. We also have John Hsu from staff. And this is a work session on electric vehicle charging stations. And I think probably one of the best places to start with this is just I'm going to turn it over to John. But before I do that, Commissioner Christman, do you have any opening comments?
I do not, thanks.
Okay. Well, John, why don't you run with it and we'll see where we land.
Sure. Thank you, Chairman Crotchis. About a month ago, I think it was, the commission requested the utilities come and provide some sort of information regarding EV charging stations. We set forth an agenda, and I know all of you took part in creating that agenda. And the four issues that the commission really wanted to have answered was the status of EV charging stations within the PSC's regulation, how the utilities view that, the utility roles in owning and serving charging stations, and the utilities' intentions regarding ownership in the future, possible impacts that the charging stations may have on ratepayers, and the PSC's role in charging station development and other issues to consider. So it was left to be meant to be open to for the utilities to present other concerns or issues that they foresee coming regarding EV charging stations and probably the proliferation of EV vehicles as well. I know I reached out with all three of the utilities, and I think they're all prepared to have a discussion with the commission today. Specifically, XL Energy, I think, is already set up and with Matt on the tech side to provide some sort of information as well as a brief presentation as well.
Okay. You know, one thing as we go through this, and I suppose I could have made the comment earlier, but I think they'll be looking for direction from us as well, or clarification on what would or would not be jurisdictional to the Public Service Commission, because that will factor in, I would have to believe, with their strategic plan if this is an area of interest, and obviously if they're on the call, I think it in all likelihood is. So that's actually a question of mine as well, because this is unique in many instances. But
sure.
But just wanted to throw that out, that we'll learn from them, they'll learn from us, and see where it takes us.
So we're ready to go into presentation?
I think we are ready to go into presentation.
All right. Well, this is Dave Cedarquist with XL Energy, a regulatory consultant. I also have, joining the meeting from XL Energy, is Matthias Bell. Matthias is a principal consultant in our electric transportation group. And then, of course, Mark Nisbet, principal manager in North Dakota. I'm going to be handing things over to them here very quickly. Mark's been very engaged in the discussions, monitoring the discussions in North Dakota on this topic. Matthias has a presentation that he will make as well, attempting to address some of the commission's issues. But Matthias will talk a little bit about the company's electric vehicle strategy, the overall strategy. So with that, I think I might let Mark just kind of open things up, maybe with an opening comment. Mark, go ahead.
Say Dave and Mark, just before you...
Yes.
Before you start, and Mark, you might have been muted, but before you start, just to let you know, this is being recorded, so there'll be an audio recording, and anything that, you know, we discuss will be accessible by the public. So in terms of it doesn't have a case number, but I would imagine it's still accessible if someone wanted to listen to the transcript.
Yeah, under the open records laws, they can request it.
But just, you know, in terms of strategy and whatnot, just keep that in mind. If there's anything that you think is being said in confidence, this is all open, subject to open records requests.
Thank you, Commissioner.
Yeah, thank you, Commissioner, for covering up for my sin of keeping that microphone muted. I've had that issue on times past, but I appreciate Mr. Chu reaching out to us, and indeed our company has become very interested in the utilization of electric cars, what it might mean to our system, and I would say that the Department of Transportation, DOT, in North Dakota is spending a fair amount of time seeing how they will interact with the federal guidelines and what we have in mind. But from our company, Matthias has done a lot of work on it, and personally, I'll say I'm very interested as well. I have an electric vehicle, and so I'm registered and paying the new license plate fee to do my part to keep the roads up to shape. And I've been very impressed with the car. It still has that range anxiety issue, and I think that's what people are going to try to address for the future. Between Grand Forks and Fargo, it's an easy up and down the road, but by the time I try to drive to Bismarck, I had to leave that car at home. So, Matthias, I'll let you jump in and explain what our company sees as the future and what we've already accomplished around some of our rates and programs.
Yeah, well, again, appreciate everyone's time today. Happy to be talking through this, and I'm very open to taking questions from you all during the presentation as well as after. So you all know, you heard my title. I've been very involved with a lot of the company's EV strategy and policy work, in front of other regulatory commissions and working with stakeholders in Minnesota and Wisconsin, but also down in New Mexico and Colorado, and a little bit of time spent in Texas. So happy to be providing you all with some of the perspectives and lessons learned from the company in those jurisdictions, and really grateful to have the opportunity to in front of you all for the first time today. Now, before I dive into the slides, I think there's a couple of reasons why the company in particular is excited about supporting electric vehicles today. I think one aspect of it, and it dovetails really well with our overall company strategy, and that's really focused on improving the customer experience. Throughout all of our service territories, we hear from communities and customers coming to us with questions about how can Xcel Energy be supporting me, or how can I learn more information about EVs? And we do see Xcel Energy providing a very important role in terms of improving that customer experience around EVs and really focusing on a couple of the key barriers to the adoption, the ones that the utilities are best suited to address. I think the second aspect of EVs that are really exciting right now is the opportunity to use EVs to keep bills low. I think in a lot of different contexts, people look at the cost of gasoline, even the cost of gasoline right now, and compare it to utility rates, particularly off-peak time varying rates, and can see significant savings by going from gasoline vehicles to electric vehicles. The other part of electric vehicles that is important in this context, and investor-owned utilities talk about this a lot, but public utilities and co-ops do too, is the impact that revenues have, particularly if the usage is going on at night, to help create downward crackdown rates. As we talk about North Dakota, in our service territory, we are beginning to see adoption. In our service territory right now, we have Mark and about 200 other customers with EVs driving electric, plug-in hybrids as well as battery electric. And from a public charging station perspective, we'll talk more about it. There's level 2 and the DC fast charging. There's not that much available today. A smattering of chargers in Fargo and the rest of our service territory is very little or nothing, but some of the work that DOT is doing with the VW development will go to helping address that charging infrastructure gap. Going to the slides, I'll pull these up here. Talking about our overall strategy, and we understand that every state has different public policy goals around electric vehicles, and we have an overall strategy that we we're employing to help support the customers in each one of those service territories. I think from our perspective, we're really focused on addressing three key market segments and then addressing, like I said earlier, three barriers that we think utilities are really well positioned to help address while working with customers. One key market segment, goes without saying, is home charging, where we're today. For a lot of customers, they spend more than 80% of their time charging on their home, and generally once they come home from work and at night. Another key segment that we're looking to support, we get a lot of questions from, is both communities and customers that operate fleets. Some of that's light duty vehicles, like poles and pickup trucks, but we're talking to more and more customers today with questions about school buses or transit buses or even some trucking now. And then I think a third market segment that I know there's a lot of focus today around, which is like fast charging, which we see as being very important for EVs for one, being able to get from one community to another, but two, there are customers that we have that want EVs that currently can't charge at home. They may not have an access to a garage, or they live in an apartment facility where they just can't get charging. So public charging provides a couple useful lanes for customers. And then from a barriers perspective, what we've been building programs to help address in different service territories are, one, helping customers address challenges around just awareness and information. A lot of people come to our website just hoping to learn more about EVs and to get these things set up and what's the charging situation. Another area that I think there's a lot of interest in today's discussion around is the utility role in helping support customers address some of the upfront cost barriers. And then I think three is really doing what we can as a utility to encourage charging to happen when it's convenient for the customer to occur during those low off-peak hours that can lower their EV charging bills, but also lower the EV's use on both the generation and transmission side, but also on the distribution side of things too.
So can I ask a quick question on that slide?
Yep.
The charging for fleet operators, will that be a partnership of sorts where you put those facilities or put the charging facility on their property and it becomes, again, a partnership of sorts versus a standalone location, which I think would be challenging?
So every service territory we put proposed programs, we've seen programs approved, Chair. We work a little bit differently. I think to your question, we're trying to do a lot to support transit agencies. That's generally in something like a charging infrastructure in one of their garages. That if they have a bus, they need to make sure that they're using that charging equipment. It's really, for the most part, exclusively used just for the bus. You don't want to have to come back to your facility, wait for somebody to move their EV to charge your bus.
Mm-hmm.
However, there are other cases, particularly once this stuff starts to bring into workplace, where some customers say, hey, we want our pool cars to be able to charge at night. We certainly like the idea of utilizing this infrastructure more and encouraging some workplace or some others to maybe use that charging infrastructure during it.
Okay, thank you.
Is that getting it?
Yes. I just, when I look at, I think there will be a number of partnerships, you know, and public fast charging might be another example where when it's going to take for a level three charger 20, 30 minutes, still taking 20 to 30 minutes to charge, what do people do in the meantime? I mean, it could be in the parking lot of, you know, retail outlets. It could be in the parking lot for restaurants. It could be in a lot of different locations. But I think to have someone just charge a vehicle and wait 30 minutes doing little, if anything else, I think strategically, I guess I'm just putting my business hat on, In order to be competitive, I think that has to be factored in. But that's a business strategy and direction that's not of our concern, in my opinion, as a commission, just more of a curiosity that I have.
It's an important consideration, and we hear customers and side hosting developers thinking about that quite a bit. You're absolutely right. Putting a public charging station in the middle of the nowhere is not as good of a customer experience, and missing out on some key aspects of perhaps economic development, tourism, getting people to come into business, and many of these things are often cited close to or near retail stores or places of interest. And that's a great question.
All right, thank you.
Going into just a couple aspects of our some of our programs, talked a lot about encouraging charging at the right time period. There's two ways that we've worked to encourage customers in other jurisdictions to charge in those right time periods. One is through time-varying rates. Xcel Energy has our time-of-day rate in North Dakota, and we do see rates like that being excellent for encouraging customers to charge during those off-peak hours. The other aspect that we've been piloting, and you can do this either through the customer's charging equipment, or in some cases actually the vehicles themselves, is sending signals through wireless communications to the vehicle or charging station, not that different than some, say, air conditioning and thermostat demand response programs to encourage charging or move charging to some of those hours of that are particularly low cost. And so there's a couple different aspects and ways that utilities like Xcel Energy have been encouraging customers to charge during those off-peak hours. To date, it goes without saying, these have been voluntary opt-in programs that we've been encouraging customers to participate in. I think the other aspect that we wanted to highlight too is around some of those initial upfront costs. And this is really highlighting a lot of different utilities approaches to supporting customers in terms of charging infrastructure. In between those jurisdictions I listed off earlier, we're piloting or have programs in different jurisdictions doing each one of these. And so breaking down the pieces to keep it very high level and not get too immersed in technical engineering, we have what we call the EV service connection, which is everything from the transformer up to the meter, and we really see that as our normal course of business as utilities. As we talk about customer support, where the focus has been here really on two pieces, what's often called the EV supply infrastructure, which is everything generally from the point of connection to the stub of the charging equipment, so switch gears, conduit, and wiring. And a lot of utilities, including Xcel Energy, say in Minnesota, have been focused on providing customers with that AV supply infrastructure as well. I think the third aspect of it is a charging station. There's a couple different ways to charge for the charging equipment. In Minnesota, well, Xcel Energy is done, and in Wisconsin, we recently, the commission voted to approve, is the charging equipment. We bill customers essentially for the annual revenue requirement of the charging equipment, and they pay for it on their bill. There's other ways in public charging that we can talk about in terms of helping offset those costs. Some utilities have also looked to charge that charging equipment more generally to a broader set of customers. So absolutely, you've probably heard some of these models. I can talk about each one of them a little bit more. An extension again, the traditional course of business, make radius up to the charger by letting a customer or a side hoster or developer select the charging equipment known in those cases. Others like the residential model, like I said, we're doing in Wisconsin and Minnesota that are focused on charger only. And some cases where the utility offers to customers and side hosting developers solutions where the utility doesn't own all the infrastructure. I think one other aspect, very similar to DSN, and that been considered in other states is offering rebates for the charging infrastructure as well. And again, I think this all comes down to public policy questions around what the commission, what stakeholders, and what the utility believes is most appropriate for supporting customers in different contexts. I am sensitive to time.
Can I have you back up to 1 second? Thais, so you, which one is being used in Wisconsin and Minnesota?
So for commercial, what we've done for fleets, and as well as public charging, the commissions have approved the make ready. And then for residential, we don't have written orders, but the commission in Minnesota and Wisconsin have both recently voted to approve the charging only option. In Minnesota, we've been piloting the charging only option for, we have more than 150 customers participating in that flavor, but the commission in Minnesota voted to approve a tariff offering for all customers in that charger only model.
Okay. Is that generally been contrary or consistent with the recommendation of the company?
We've supported that model from that our proposal is focused on attorney only for residential.
Okay, thank you.
I should say for fleets in Minnesota, we do have an option where we provide make readies, and then we offer customers the choice to either bring their own charging equipment or select an eligible charger from the company, and then the residential offering, the customer pays a monthly charge for the fleet charging equipment.
And Matthias, have you committed to anything beyond the traditional line extension model in North Dakota?
Today we have not proposed anything.
Okay.
We are interested in supporting our customers. We have strong interest from some. I think conversations like this, I think, are very helpful for us to have a better indication of what this group of stakeholders think is the appropriate model or appropriate models in the state. I will say we've heard strong customer support in many contexts for Make Ready. I think that, as well as the charger only option for residential, but again, I think we all need to have broader conversations about the interest for the sort of operations in the near term in North Dakota supporting our customers.
I'm guessing, would you expect I'd be wrong if I said that there's probably a lot of various types of business models that would be in favor of the utility doing more for them as long as the rest of the ratepayers ended up paying for parts of the costs?
I think there's a lot of, it's early days in the market. We have 200 electric vehicles. Our forecast suggests that we'll have a lot more by 2030. That said, I think customers do like these models a lot. We're particularly looking for the models best suitable for customers that find that balance between encouraging utilization and getting customers to contribute to both the revenues and the cost, while also looking out for the broader interests of all of our customers.
Could you say in general, if I'm looking at line extension correctly, or interpreting that correctly, do you have corporations, for example, that are interested or expressing interest in having that type of a partnership with you?
So in that first one, the line extension, I would Is that the one you're pointing to right now? I'm sorry.
That is the one that I am looking at and assuming I'm interpreting it correctly. And if I'm not, then the question may not make sense.
So, and again, that one is really calling out our current course of business, where just like any other new customer or new load coming into our service territory, we are supporting them with the line extension under our tariff policies. And throughout our jurisdictions, we do see customers, particularly on public charging, many supported by grants, working with the company through that model. Where some of the other models become more prevalent is when public policy questions arise around, well, is that model sufficient to getting to the longer-term benefits that a broader group of stakeholders see around EVs in terms of overall revenues? And is there a sufficient amount of public charging that the market alone can justify? In many cases, utilities and others have said, at least on a limited basis, we do need some pilots to help support infrastructure to address that gap. And so, in many cases, I think it's been the first has been enough for some to participate, particularly in areas that expect high utilization. But as we go to other areas that are more rural and there's concerns about access to the benefits, those areas in particular, some of these other models may be needed.
Okay, thank you.
So going to the next slide. Okay, I am sensitive to time and others. Do you folks have a time check on me here?
A time, I think he wants to know from a time standpoint.
Yeah, I've talked to a lot of the points. I can read through these pretty quickly and take any other questions you all have, Commission. On the home charging, again, we're very focused on addressing that barrier around information and awareness, making sure that customers have access to that through our webpage, particularly those that are interested in EVs and trying to learn more about charging. Again, a very important aspect is that most of the charging is happening at home, and so we're doing what we can in order to encourage that charging to happen during those off-peak times. And we're trying, in other jurisdictions, we have put forward home charging solutions to try to make it easier for customers to access the benefits of EVs through home charging equipment. Fleets, again, I want to be pretty short, but we have seen that a lot of the earliest adopters in our service territory are fleet customers who have several goals for going towards electric vehicles, some of that's their light duty and medium duty and heavy duty size. Some of that is due to their focus on economics, others is due to some of the other goals those customers have around things like sustainability. And the company has put forward, again,
what appendage.
Analytics and information services to help them understand what vehicles are best suited for going electric, as well as in some jurisdictions, solutions to help lower the upfront cost of the infrastructure. And then I think third is public charging. And we've been talking about it, and I think that, again, the Department of Transportation is doing very good work in this area in North Dakota. For the adoption we're likely to see over in North Dakota over the next 10 years, we will need more public charging infrastructure, but we will not need to see public charging stations on every single block. I think some of the estimates around making sure that on corridors, having all charging stations within 75 miles of each other makes a lot of sense. And I think there's a broader public policy question around should all residents in North Dakota be within about 50 to 75 miles of public charging stations. And again, public charging, I think we see as a business as being really helpful for enabling customers to drive between North Dakota communities as well as 30B fiber to be able to drive through North Dakota. And that it is also really important when thinking about those customers that want to have an EV but can't charge at their home or at their business. So those are my pieces at a very high level. I really appreciate the engagement and the questions you all have already been asking. Do you all have other questions for Xcel Energy right now?
Did they go through the one? Did they go through the ones we asked?
I do, Matthias, but kind of if you can do short answers, because I think there's some other questions here. And I have these questions for any of the utilities, so if they're listening, they can save me asking. One is, you mentioned educating people about, like, charging at night and that sort of thing. I assume you work through, like, the automobile dealers or something to make sure that their sales force knows about that and that sort of thing. Would I be correct?
Yeah. For residential customers, I think there's a couple important channels. A lot of people today look for information through the web. So we have that there in a lot of jurisdictions. I think what you're calling out is exactly right. Auto dealerships are another really important channel for education. And another area that I want to just call attention to is electricians. We're coming to customers' homes or businesses, and customers are looking often for advice from them too.
Okay, and secondly, in my getting to be pretty long lifetime, I've seen that the normal gasoline and diesel powered infrastructure change completely around from what used to just be plain gas and service stations to now those are hard to find anymore, and there's big convenience stores and they're sort of spread out. You know, it's probably hard to go much more than about 50 miles without finding one that's open all night and offers conveniences and that sort of thing. In this market, when even the fast chargers take longer than fueling a car or truck with fuel, why wouldn't we just expect that at the right time, those types of entrepreneurs that have made that change out in the last few decades are going to do the same thing and request a line extension if they don't have enough capacity and add charging stations where people can easily get in and out through traffic and have the conveniences of a convenience store while they're charging?
Mm-hmm. I think that's a very good and fair question. I think there's two aspects of it to think about too. One, there are similarities and differences to gasoline. Most people aren't able to fill up their car with gasoline at their home like they do with EVs. Again, oftentimes more than 80% of charging occurs at home. So there's not as much need for public charging in the way there is for public gas stations. I think the other aspect though is, again, looking to markets where there are more EVs already, when EVs have come into those markets, in the near term, there is a chicken and the egg problem, and that even with quite a few EVs, there's not enough public charging utilization to justify market actors always to invest in public charging. And so as a result, you have gaps, particularly in areas that are necessary but may not have that much utilization. And that's when the public policy questions have emerged of, well, how are those gaps going to be addressed?
Okay. Thank you.
Hi there. My name's Julie Fedorchuk, and I missed the beginning part of your or most of it, actually. So I apologize. Who all from Xcel is on this call?
We have Matthias Bell and Mark and Dave, do you want to nod yourselves?
Yep. Dave Cedarquist and Mark Nisbet.
Okay, very good, guys. Thank you. Is Matthias the correct one to kind of talk about some of the questions that we sent in advance of this meeting, Dave?
Yes, I think that Matthias probably has a broader experience throughout the different states that he's been to on this topic, so he's probably going to be the best resource.
Okay. I guess then some of the questions that I'm interested in diving into a little bit more, and I apologize if you covered this some, but what's your view on, like, what's XL's view on owning charging stations, and is that something that your company intends to do, sees as part of its business plan in the future?
Yeah, so we did have the opportunity to talk about that more. I think every market segment and what's the appropriate way to serve that market segment are very good questions to be asking. We did highlight that in Wisconsin and Minnesota, we have received approvals for what would typically call make-ready infrastructure to support our commercial customers. And in the residential segment, we have piloted and gotten approval to offer charging equipment and a home charging service to residential customers. Again, the focus is on helping reduce those upfront costs in a thoughtful and appropriate manner.
Okay, and what's your ambition in North Dakota? What's the company's thoughts on what you want to do here?
I think we're really excited about the opportunity to support our customers more. It is early days in the UK market, and I think conversations like this with you all, Commission, and other stakeholders will help inform what are the most appropriate solutions to be bringing forward here.
Okay. So the make ready is something you're...
Is there anything in that there?
Yeah, the only thing I would say is, again, that concept that 80% of the charging is happening at home to make sure our customers are aware if they're going to move to an EV that they probably have a level 2 charger at home and can fully charge it overnight, it would make use of it there. And again, the fleet services were the early adapters. But I think as we talk about the convenience stores, that will probably be able to be filled by current convenience store owners who, as the commissioner pointed out, if it takes 30 minutes, you're apt to be in using the restroom facilities or picking up a meatloaf sandwich if you're in Steel and those type of things. To me, I see the focus as enabling those residential customers who are interested in the electric vehicles and the ability to utilize some of the off-peak priced electricity.
Okay.
Matthias, perhaps you can go back to that slide with the different ownership models. I sense Commissioner Fedorchik may have more questions on that.
You know what? I hate to delay things, so that's okay. I can catch up with Jack afterwards, and he can kind of fill me in on your guys' take on that. But I appreciate that, Dave. Thank you. And so you aren't, if just kind of in a nutshell, XL is looking more at the helping make ready the home for residential charging, not necessarily getting into any public charging, owning and operating public charging stations.
I think we want to follow the needs of our customers as well as the market and where public policy is guiding us. I think something that is very analogous, Commissioner, is our New Mexico filing, and that we serve more rural communities like Clovis, Hobbs, Carlsbad, and Roswell. And it's a market with very few EVs and even less public charging infrastructure. And we are trying to support the market, looking for first VW settlement. I need to see how that supports that market. And then I think second, offering make ready to see if make ready is sufficient for meeting the needs of that market. And if make ready is not sufficient, then bringing forward utility owned and operated charging stations.
Okay.
It's a really good question to be asking.
Very good. All right, thank you. That's helpful. I guess my last question would be, do you guys have any thoughts on how utility ownership, like say you owned and operated, how would that affect the private market if that's the direction that things went?
Yeah, I think there's a couple different considerations with these, and I'm sure the other utilities have thoughts here too. With regards to a lot of our programs, one thing we've done is to ensure that there's choice we're providing when we do own charging equipment for different types of charging, different types of chargers. There are Minnesota residential programs, customers can choose between ChargePoint and NLX. I think similarly, when we look at the overall public charging market, hearing that there's still that choice and competition is a consideration of our company for proposals.
Okay. Very good. Thank you.
Matthias, in a lot of states, they're kind of grappling, it seems like, with this private ownership and also utility ownership, and whether a utility should be able to include charging stations in the rate base. Does Xcel really have an opinion on that, and whether customers should be involved in the cost recovery of that?
And I think that, again, there's a couple of different ways to think about cost recovery here. One is very similar to what we've done with fleets and residential chargers, in that the company owns a charging station and the customer pays a monthly fixed charge for that charging station, roughly equivalent to the levelized revenue requirement. I think the other model that we've seen in utilities is seeking to recover a lot of the costs through the utilization and by charging drivers for that other charging. And then I think going back to some of the earlier questions about balancing access so the customers can get to this stuff against where utilization may be in the first couple of years versus where utilization can be very long road.
And that made a lot of sense to me when you said that the a lot of the customers, when you were aiding them and I guess implementing equipment, that they were making payments to offset the revenue requirements. I keep coming back, and maybe because the distinction is with the actual like fast charging stations and that sort of competition, I think there would be a lot of concerns that there would be some subsidization from customers to EV owners if that was included in the rate base. Do you have any comments on that, or am I maybe not seeing that correctly?
I think it is, again, balancing competition, utilization, and access, and that there's going to be some locations that I think will get high utilization. Those stations will likely recover more of those costs. There's others that may be necessary for the market so that customers can access these, either they're driving a long distance or it's just a lot of rural customers that want to have those. And those are, quite frankly, always going to struggle some to get the utilization necessary to offset those costs. And it's about balancing those objectives.
This is Mark again, and I guess just based on the North Dakota political landscape and some of the discussions that I've had, that does not appear to be our intent with what the DOT is doing and trying to crack that 50-mile distance between there. So yes, I could see if the regulatory body came to us and said, is there a way you can help out to continue to grow this utilization? But in general, it would not be my interest in competing against the current convenience stores.
Yeah, I think another way to think about it too, Mark, and this is something that's been discussed in other jurisdictions, is how can things like Make Ready help leverage some of the money that's coming from things like VW settlement, where there's the grants and the utility providing them for just the money to go further.
I think the last question I have is, I know you guys work in a lot of different regulatory and policy environments, and that varies clearly from state to state, where some states are encouraged to have the commissions maybe provide some sort of incentive for grid modernization or EV modernization. Now, I think we have a general idea of our regulatory structure and our policy environment set forth in our statutes. But I guess from an aspirational viewpoint, where do you think, what would Xcel like the commission's role to be moving forward, I guess, as the environment changes?
Dave, Mark, you have thoughts on that?
I might just say that, as Matthias indicated earlier, I mean, we're somewhat looking for direction from policymakers in the state. And if there are changes, for example, we look at time of use rates, some creative rate making that would do a better job of sending proper signals. You know, we would hope that regulators would see the wisdom in improving some of those kinds of things. But other than that, I don't know. Don't have anything else to offer.
Thank you.
Yeah, and this is Mark again. And the only thing I've seen are some pilots that are talking about utilization of the batteries within car fleets as part of the overall grid. And those things would have to evolve. So don't have that in the short-term future. And it goes back to the chicken and egg. If we are building customer demand for more electric cars, I think some of our asks might change as that develops and we see what's working well.
Very, very good. Thank you, guys. Appreciate the input information.
Thank you for your help. Really appreciate it.
Brian, you...
No, I asked my questions earlier. I think I'm just going to hold off. I might have a little different take, but it's something that we'll have to figure out, you know, the time and place to have that dialogue from a regulatory standpoint. But I think now it's more just to get through the presentations and to be familiar.
Gather info.
Yeah. It's kind of the chicken and the egg thing, too, because... You know, I did remind them that this is public.
Right.
So don't give away the keys to the castle along the way. Unless you want to.
All right.
Who's next?
Very good. Thank you, guys.
We also have Otter Tail MDU on the line, and maybe if MDU is ready, we could move in the direction of that company.
Do we have copies of a presentation from them? If we do, I missed it.
Not from MDU. I don't think the commissioner received it, but I think they do have one that will be on the screen here.
Hello, Travis.
Good afternoon, Commissioner. Travis Jacobson with Montana Dakota Utilities. And we've got a few others joining me today. Tammy Averly, also with the regulatory group, Carl Lippitz, our Assistant General Counsel, and then Larry Oswald, the Director of Business Development Energy Services, is here as well. And Larry has a PowerPoint presentation that he intends to put up on the screen for you, and he'll walk you through that. I'll give him just a second here to get that going. And as he's going through, as always, feel free to stop, ask questions. You know, Larry and Carl and Tammy are all very well versed, so we should be in good shape to answer any questions you have. With that, I'll turn it over to Larry.
Good afternoon, everyone. Hopefully you guys can see my screen with the presentation on it.
We see it.
All right. Now, if I can just get it to work. All right. Just going to start out a little bit here with kind of an overview of electric vehicles here in North Dakota. You know, as you guys know, that electric vehicle use is growing across the country. We think that growth is going to continue, you know, especially with you know, the original equipment manufacturers, you know, have announced that they are going to be expanding the models, and several additional models will be available here in the next 2 to 5 years, and I think that's going to continue that growth. Currently, though, you know, EV ownership in North Dakota is limited. You know, according to some of the information that the North Dakota Department of Transportation has provided as part of that working group, there's 193 hybrid vehicles registered in the state and 166 straight electric vehicles registered in the state currently. We also believe probably in North Dakota and most of our service territory, you know, the adoption rate will probably be a little bit slower than other areas of the country, and I think that range anxiety is a key barrier, but also that range anxiety during the winter months. Just from what we've been seeing with electric vehicles out there, there's a significant loss in range during the winter months, as much as 40% to 50%. In regards to the infrastructure, currently, we do serve several level one, level two chargers that are in customers' homes or businesses, and we serve them currently on our general service rate schedules that we have. We also serve two Tesla chargers in the state in Bismarck and Dickinson. Those just both energized recently. We serve them underneath our large General Electric service rate 30. And we expect that there's going to be an additional 3 chargers in our service territory based upon the VW settlement funding that was recently announced.
Larry, while you're on this slide, do you feel that those rates are the appropriate rates for this service at this point? Did we lose him?
I think he's disconnecting because it shows he's still talking, even though we got no sound.
Larry, are you there?
Is Travis still connected?
Travis?
We've lost audio.
Not in center break.
Oh, there.
We missed a bunch of that, Larry. You were... Everything after I asked the question was not, so you can maybe start over with the answer to that question.
Okay, I don't know if I heard the question.
Oh, are the general rates, are the rates that you have those level one and two chargers now and the Tesla chargers, do you feel that those are appropriate?
We feel those rates are on file and are appropriate for our electric service. We are looking at some additional EV rates that I'll talk about in a little bit and some of the criteria that we're looking at on the next slide.
Okay, very good. Thank you.
Okay. You know, when we look at some of our distribution system and can we accommodate, you know, EV charging, it really does vary. We think in a lot of our newer infrastructure, those things from probably the mid to 80s, early 90s, in most areas would probably have our distribution system will be set up to handle this additional load in homes. However, you know, customers have electric heat and then add in potentially EV chargers. You know, there could be needs to upgrade our services or distribution system. Primary in those areas. Any expansion of that, we would apply our currently effective electric extension policy to that extension and look at the revenue based upon the cost and there could be costs to the customer for those upgrades depending upon the revenue. Some of the planning that we're doing here for electric vehicles on our system and seeing that growth is, as I talked about, we are looking at developing some EV charging rates for both residential and commercial customers. Again, we one of those is cost-based rates. We are looking at time of day rate, looking to move that charging, especially in the home with the level ones, level twos, into that off-peak time period. So be a little bit different than our current time of day rates, as we're trying to design that to be more specific to EV charging, if we can support that. And in most cases, it would probably be separately metered in that customer's home or business from their general electric service. In terms of our fleet, we're evaluating applications in our fleet, looking at the economics of that ownership. One of the things is our fleet is made up not a lot of passenger cars. It's mostly our light duty stuff is trucks and SUVs with four-wheel drives, given our climate. There's not a lot of options, but we see more options coming, in that 2022-2023 time period, according to what the manufacturers have indicated their plans are for those vehicles. And heavy-duty applications like our bucket trucks and those types of things, options are really limited. So we think that's probably even going to be a little bit further down the road. Last slide I have is related to the North Dakota Public Service Commission's role in EV infrastructure. Of course, any EV rates that we would look to propose would require them to be approved by the North Dakota Public Service Commission. Currently, our rates are set up to prohibit sale for resale of that energy. Most of these commercial EV chargers out there are charging by time versus units of energy, so that fits in with what is in our tariffs. And typically, probably a lot of those rates that the EV chargers, the commercial ones, probably include more than just the energy costs. They're going to have recovery of their other operating and capital costs, of course, with putting in those chargers. It is possible that changes to the sale for resale provisions in the state could be required for EV chargers if it's deemed necessary by the commission. And that ends my prepared slides, and I'm available for any questions you may have or any of the other Montana Dakota team that's on the call.
So you're looking at it in a little different fashion than Northern States Power, more from a supplier standpoint of energy.
Yes, that is correct.
Okay.
So eliminating the sale for resale restriction, the point there would be then so that they could charge their customers for the units of electricity instead of the time. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's what that was related to. Is cause currently, they don't charge by kilowatt hour or kW. It's pretty much time. And I think, especially with our rate tariffs, we would have to have the change to allow that resale if they wanted to sell it by per unit energy.
And is that a common thing that's happening in other states? Do a lot of other states have the limitation on sale for resale? And if they do, then is that what you're seeing in other states to get rid of that for EVs?
I'm not sure with the other states. Maybe Travis or Tammy who's on the line maybe have looked at other states if that provision is out there, but I have not.
I have no other questions. Thank you.
So, Larry, this is Julie. Have you looked at, are you guys pursuing at all the make-ready approach?
We haven't. We've looked at what some other states and other suppliers are doing, so we were aware of some of those other approaches, the make ready approach and those things. We have not looked at that model at this point in time.
Okay. And then when you were talking about your some of your existing customers who have home charging stations. I wasn't quite clear when you had to upgrade and add change equipment, was that then paid for by the customer?
I'm not aware of a specific example on some of the in-home chargers if we had upgrades. I think the majority of them have had adequate service so that we didn't have to charge for the upgrades and everything was on their side of the meter. But we would look at it, you know, based upon how much revenue that charger would generate to see how much the customer may have to pay for those upgrades, or if we could do it, if the revenue was sufficient to warrant that expenditure.
I see. All right. Okay. I don't think I have any more questions for Larry.
And Ottertail.
Jackie, do you have any?
I do have one question. In general, do you believe that the charging stations are end-use customers? I know there's a lot of discussion of whether that's a public utility to be regulated in some form or not. Or do you think that does the Montana Dakota utility really just view it as end-use customer?
Sorry, Jack, you kind of broke up there. I didn't quite hear the question. Could you please repeat it?
Sure, and I think this kind of goes along with the sale or resale of electricity, and I think that's actually in our administrative rules in addition to your tariffs. But does MDU, do they generally view the charging station as an end-use customer? Or I know there's a lot of discussion in a lot of states regarding what type of regulation should occur over electric charging stations.
Yeah, we view them as, you know, just like any other end-use customer downstream, and they may have various things, you know, on their side of the meter. So we see them just like any other customer.
Gotcha. And I guess you probably heard the question I asked to Ottertail. Of course, we have a legislative session coming up here, and there's just kind of a broader discussion that's going on, and I think that's partially triggered by the DOT committee that are the DOT's their study group that they've been putting together, and their the information they provide to the committee. But where does Montana Dakota where do they foresee this going? What are they expecting from the commission going forward, or aspirationally, what would they like to see from the commission in terms of regulation or non-regulation?
I guess as we start to continue to develop our plans for potential proposing an EV rate, we'd look for the commission to consider the merits of that rate structure that we propose. Again, we definitely see it as wanting to structure that to incentivize customers to move to the off-peak time periods, avoid growing our peak, but also we want that rate to be cost-based to be able to support it itself as well. So, with that, I don't know if there's, any other expectations we have at this time.
Sure. So what I'm gathering then is you generally feel that the incentives and, I guess, the involvement the commission has, Montana Dakota utilities are foreseeing from the utility are foreseeing from the commission, we already currently are able to do within our tariffs and our current authority, and that's what you would expect.
Correct.
Okay. Thank you.
I don't have any more from Larry. That's helpful.
Thanks, Larry.
All right, thank you.
Thank you, Larry. Are you, Brian, are you running this or is Jack running? Jack's running the meeting? Okay.
Sure, I can do that. Next up, we have Otter Tail, and I think they already provide the slides as well. And I know they are a little bit uniquely situated relative to the other utilities because they currently do have ownership of some EV charging stations currently in Minnesota and none in North Dakota at this time. So,
did you say none or one?
They do not have them, is my understanding, in North Dakota at this time. However, they do have some in other states. Feel free to begin. Thank you.
Good afternoon, Commission. This is Jason Greener. I'm the Market Planning Manager here at Otter Tail Power. I appreciate the opportunity to talk about electric vehicles today with the Commission. I'm joined by Pete Bithon. You can see him there, part of the Florida Department. And then I also have staff member Luke Meach on as well, and hopefully we can answer any of the questions that you have today. I'll just jump into my slide presentation, if that works okay for you. Can you see the slides okay?
Yep, we see it. Thank you.
Great. Hopefully you have your own copy too. I know I sent that over earlier today. Otter Tail does actually own and operate one DC fast charger for public charging in Minnesota. And there's a picture of it right here. That is located here in Fergus Falls, and I'll be talking about that here in a little bit. Here's the four agenda items that we were given today, so I'll be going in essence of time, I'll probably move really quickly through slides. So the first question, status of EV charging within the PSC's regulation. One thing that Otter Tail's done is we're really trying to build awareness and education with our customers. I think there's a lot of interest out there, but there's a lack of awareness and education. So we're first starting to address that. And one way that we're doing that is we're donating Level 2 chargers in communities that request that. So we're having different communities where, for example, and I'll show you my next slide, universities or museums or wherever it might be that say, hey, we'd really like to have a Level 2 charger for EV charging. We want to track them off the interstate. We want them to come visit our town. So we've tried to partner with them, and we've donated them the equipment. And then what they've done is they put that charger behind their own meter, so they're paying the energy, and they offer that charging to visitors for free. Another space that we're operating in, Tesla came to us. This is a picture of Jamestown, where Tesla came to us, and they recently installed 8 superchargers. And so we're serving those chargers on our general service rates. And so those are some of the options that we're doing right now. We also have our off-peak rates that we allow EV chargers on it as well, of course, in the home.
Can you tell me, if possible, and if you can't, it might be a little too broad, but Tesla has been very aggressive in regions or cities where EV usage is much higher than North Dakota. Is that a fair assessment?
Yes, that's a very fair assessment.
Okay, so in many respects, I think it was said earlier in another presentation, what comes first, the chicken or the egg, but it's a space that they, in all likelihood, will continue to be very aggressive in.
Yeah, Tesla, it's an interesting way to approach the marketplace. They definitely want to control the customer's experience. They want to make sure that there's infrastructure out there, otherwise they know their vehicles will not be purchased. So they're really trying to get ahead of that and make sure there's a robust network out there. Major travel corridors that their customers can access.
Mm-hmm. Is that a follow-up to that?
No.
Okay. Jason, you mentioned that you guys are donating some of the Level 2 chargers to communities. is that in North Dakota, your entire territory? And when you say donate, who covers those costs? Are those covered by ratepayers?
Those would be covered by shareholders. So that is you know, it's a new expense, and so that's not something that's, I would say, is part of our retail rates. And so that would be covered by shareholders. It's just a new expense that we're paying for, and we're just trying to build awareness in these communities.
Okay.
So I do a couple of them that, you know, University of Jamestown, that was several years ago. We donated that one, the Buffalo Museum in Jamestown as well. And then we just purchased one for the city of Wahpeton, that they'll be putting one in. And I know the city of Wahpeton also, they'll be receiving some of the VW money to a fast charger. Now, just so you understand, these level two chargers, we're probably looking at a total investment from Monica when we donate. We're talking probably about $3,000. We usually buy the equipment, and then we pay for some of the costs for the installation. We try to partner with a local electrician and try to get them possibly to donate some of the materials or time. And then a lot of times, if you can see on this sign here where the University of Jamestown one is, we try to feature not only the host site, but Otter Tail, and then also the electrical contractor there too. So everyone gets a little bit of notoriety for partnering on that project.
And is the charge free? Do they pay for this charge?
Yep. The three host sites in these situations, they all feel that, you know, for the little bit of electricity, it's worth having, pulling, you know, visitors to their town or having that. You know, we've done a couple universities now, and four universities now. They all want to have, you know, a level two charger on their university. They want to be able to tell, you know, prospective students that they have this service. And sometimes we've seen where they actually charge a little extra to the students for a parking pass and allow them access to that charger. So in that case, the university might be getting compensated.
It's early right now, but with only just a handful of electric vehicles, is it like at the University of Jamestown, is it one of the professors that parks there every day and that's kind of their spot, or are they limited? Well, and I say it because we only have 130 electric vehicles in the state. I mean, I'd be excited to hear no, it actually rotates around quite a bit, but it doesn't seem likely. Do you know?
That's an excellent question. I appreciate it, Commissioner. Do you have a situation where this is in Minnesota now? I don't know specifically Jamestown. Hopefully they're managed, so policing that a little bit. But we do have a situation in Minnesota where we donate one to the community, and the one individual in the community is using it all the time because he lives two blocks away. So he parks his car downtown, walks two blocks to his house.
Sure.
That community hasn't been able to figure that out and, you know, talk to that individual. And it's interesting because it gets a lot of people talking about this, and I think it elevates the interest. And then now they're saying, you know what, we need another one. And so so they're likely going to be putting in another one soon. But, you know, in many cases, because these are basically be called, somebody might say they're a dumb charger because they're not, there's no kiosk there for payment. So in this situation, you know, it could be that the business could lock that charger out and they could say, you need to charge, you know, come see us, or it's only for a customer or something like that. You know, people visiting the library and museum, so. I will say EV drivers have an interesting way of finding each other through the different applications out there, and it's a whole like underground world that they all talk and know each other, and it's very interesting.
They know where the free spots are.
We do know that, yes. Okay, moving on. So the second agenda, fill your roles in owning and serving charging stations. You know, I believe that the electric initially at least in developing public
Jason, can I interrupt you for a second?
And we're not seeing the private investment making those investments. So we see a gap in these rural areas. We're seeing it in Minnesota. We see it in North Dakota and South Dakota as well. And so we want to make sure that we're providing solutions there. Long-term, you know, we don't feel that we need to own and operate the charging equipment. That's not the business that we want to be in, too. We're hoping that the private marketplace eventually replaces, you know, a utility, and they can serve all of our customers. All of our customers have that access. And I'll be talking about this here. Any questions?
Matt, maybe you can mention that.
Jason, can I interrupt you for a second? It seems, I don't know if you have like an automatic volume control going on with your microphone, but it seems about every time you kind of turn your head away, your volume reduces significantly.
Okay. I will try to make sure I'm straightforward here, and that's not an issue. I don't have a headset I can throw on for it. Okay.
You're really clear as long as you don't move.
Thank you for letting me know that. Okay, so looking at this slide here, this is basically the current state of DC fast charging. I jumped on PlugShare yesterday, grabbed a map that shows where all the DC fast charging is. The non-Tesla DC fast charging is in North Dakota. And you can see it's pretty far, and a few, not in between. And so, right now, that's a pretty challenging experience for a driver of an EV to get across the state. I think it was Mark saying earlier that, yeah, he can get from Grand Forks up to Fargo and back, but going anywhere else is pretty challenging. And so we're working on some initiatives to try to see if we can help solve some of that. Just looking at this map again, I'm looking at level 2 chargers. Here's what it looks like. Still not a lot of penetration on level 2 chargers. There are some out there in case, you know, somebody can't use the fast charge, but still not a lot in between. As you can think about Otter Tail service for Grand Forks. And in mine out there, the Highway 2 corridor that we serve, there's really nothing in between Grand Forks and mine. And that's partly on me, so I'm trying to figure that out. I want to share just a quick story. Last February, I was downtown Fergus Falls, and I saw a brand new Chevy Bolt charging at our 50 kW charger. And whenever I see somebody charging, I have to go and talk to them and just get their story. And this individual, it was interesting because this individual had just gone down to Minneapolis and purchased a Chevy Bolt. And that was my first thing. I was, you know, somewhat upset about that because I'm hoping that they could, you know, be buying the Chevy Bolt in our service area somewhere. But the person explained to me that they lived in Rugby, North Dakota. And I said, well, that's fantastic. You're likely one of our customers. I said, yeah, I'm a hotel customer, but, you know, you guys don't have any charging out there. And they said, yes. And he really appreciated the charging opportunity he had in Fergus Falls there. But he was trying to figure out how to get home. And so what he said was that evening he was going to drive to Fargo, spend the night. Then he's going to get a charge in Moorhead, a fast charger. Then he's going to drive to Grand Forks and top off on the level 2 charger there for a couple hours. And then he's going to try to get across the 148 miles to Rugby. And hopefully the wind was going to cooperate and he's going to be able to get home fine. And that's an experience that really, you know, frustrates me. You know, here's one of our customers, and we want to make sure that they're having a good experience out there and likely that there's a lot of, you know, other customers in that same situation. And so, you know, we already had some plans here, but I think this just confirmed just the lack of charging and the poor customer experience that exists in the marketplace today. Okay, so just continuing the agenda, impacts to ratepayers. You know, there's obviously some costs here and there's benefits. You know, you have benefits as far as looking at this. This is typically residential customers charging here. And with residential customers charging, you know, 80% of that charging, like Matthias said, is going to be done in the home. And so you're going to have some benefits there as far as more volume of energy being used, probably decreases cost. But obviously, there's cost that comes with public charging, you know, owned by the utility, and you have to recover those costs. But I think there's other benefits as well. You know, one of the things we're trying to do here is introduce new technologies to our customers. We want to make sure that our rural customers are on the same playing field as urban customers. You know, if you look at our Minnesota service territory, you see Minneapolis, St. Paul with, you know, 50, 100 DC fast chargers. And outstate, you know, there's, until we put the one in First Falls, there was no DC fast chargers that IHL served. And so we want to make sure that there's opportunity for all customers there. And we saw that, you know, a good example that I give is we saw it with broadband, where it hit the urban areas first, and it was really a struggle to get it to a lot of places, and a lot of our customers were left behind. And so, you know, we don't want to make that mistake again, and we want to make sure that everyone has equal access. We want to also remove obstacles for people that are traveling to North Dakota communities, and we realize that, you know, this is the first time where we really have affordable electric consumer, where they're mobile, they're driving around. So that's a little point as well. And then, like I was saying before, you know, fast charging options, they're an extension of the residential class. And then the fourth item here, the PSC's role in charging station development and other issues to consider. I would just say that, you know, Irontail, you know, we're looking for guidance. In Minnesota, we were requested to do some pilots, and we're ramping those up. I think we're going to learn a lot from those, and we're going to learn. We'll probably make some mistakes, but we're probably going to learn a lot that we can apply to the Dakotas, and hopefully we have a better solution once we get up to North Dakota with any kind of plan. But we really just want some guidance, and we see in the short term. I know this is a question that we've been asking, but we see in the short term that it's likely that, for Otter Tail's case, a rural area that we serve, that the utility is going to have to fill that gap where private investment has not. So I'm going to talk a little bit about what we're doing in Minnesota, just very quickly here. And so in Minnesota, what we're proposing before the commission, and they'll decide, is these green circles is where we're going to put public DC fast charging. There's 11 sites in Minnesota. And what that's going to do is it's going to put 100% of our customers within 60 miles of a charger. We're trying to develop a network here that's reliable, safe, and customers can depend on it for a seamless experience. What we eventually like to do after we learn our lessons in Minnesota is bring a similar concept to North Dakota and ask for your approval on something similar, where the Otter Tail would own and operate 16 DC fast chargers in North Dakota, and then also several in South Dakota. Any questions on that? Hopefully you can still hear me.
Yeah, that sounds, we can hear you. What is your model, ownership model on those that you're anticipating? On the ones, yeah. Or and what you're doing in Minnesota?
Yeah, so let me just tackle that. That's the next slide here. So thank you for that segue. Our filing in Minnesota, what it included is several things. And it modified our existing off-peak rates or interruptible rates to allow EV charging on those rates. So those are our rates that we have direct load control. So if energy meets, we can control those meters and we can shut that charging off. That's something that we already had approval of those rates in our last North Dakota rate case just a couple of years ago. So I appreciate your help on that. So Minnesota lagged a little bit there. The second item is those 11 chargers in Minnesota. We're asking, it's about a $1.6 million capital outlay that we're asking for recovery of. And then over that 4 years, it's about $600,000 of O&M associated with it, as far as labor, advertising, networking fees, maintenance fees, things like that. So a little over $100,000 a year to maintain those chargers as we get those built. Third item here is we introduced a rate schedule that allows Otter Tail to charge the driver per kilowatt hour for the energy that they're using. And those were using time differentiated rates, so we're trying to send price signals to try to force that usage to off-peak periods if possible. We are offsetting all energy used with the wind renewable energy credits. And then that's more of a marketing thing to make sure that those drivers know that the energy they're using is being offset by wind. And then we're also offering, because we don't want to have the market ourselves, we're making sure that we're offering basically the same rate to third parties that want to develop and charge people or build customers, drivers for energy or for charging at a DC FC site. So what we're going to charge a driver, we're offering that same rate to a third party as well. And then lastly, we're donating another 10 level 2 chargers to communities that are underserved with electric vehicle infrastructure now that have interest in just for more education and awareness. And we're going to work with, on all these initiatives, number 2 and 4 there, where we're putting in infrastructure, we are going to be working closely with site hosts to make sure we're partnering, we're getting things put in the right places. We have a big site host that cares about the success of both the DC fast charger and the level 2 chargers. But in the case of level 2 chargers, we will be donating those to the site host for them to maintain as well.
On that one question, on the costs, capital costs in O&M, are you suggesting, or do you have numbers to show that those costs will be covered by increased energy use, or will those be covered by ratepayers?
Yeah, great question. And so a couple ways to look at it. It all depends on utilization. And so in the short term, it's likely that we're not going to, collect enough revenue to pay for that capital investment. The other side of it is, long term, our numbers are based on growing EV adoption and long term charging utilization of those stations. The other side to think of it though is when you think of the residential class as primarily using these charging units, they're likely using more energy at home. And they're likely decreasing costs on the residential class. And so I see this as an extension of the residential class and all costs being allocated to the residential class in this instance.
All right.
On the capital investment estimate and then operation and maintenance as well, but I think more on the capital side. Are there funding mechanisms, federal funding mechanisms that help subsidize that capital investment, or is that after those are factored in, if they exist?
Yeah, thanks for that question. I'm glad you brought it up. I did miss that. So this is before any kind of funding that we could utilize. On the one that we developed in first, I'll just jump back here. This one here. This was actually a project that we partnered with. It was an initiative called Michigan to Montana, where they're trying to develop the I-99 corridors. And this one, we got the U.S. Department of Energy to fund about 30% of that project. We would also be looking at trying to utilize both land settlement funding and any other funding that might be available out there. Already been at the success, and we continue to try to do that and reduce our customers' responsibility.
Okay, thank you.
I'm curious about just a term that you use. You define these as either fast chargers or level 2, one being descriptive and one numerical. Is a fast charger also a level 3? Or one, or?
Yeah, good question, and I apologize for not explaining that better. So typically, DC fast chargers are usually 50 kilowatts or greater. Okay, and then when we think about a level two, usually when you run into those out there, you'll find those, well, in a customer's garage, possibly. They might be 4 kW, 7 kW in a customer's garage. But when you find them out in public, like the ones we put in, they're either 7 to 10 kW. And so they're about a fifth, you know, a fifth the size, I would say, or a fifth to seventh the size of a DC fast charger. Now, when we start putting in DC fast chargers, we're likely going to put in some cases, in Minnesota, we'll be putting in 50 kW chargers. And in some cases, we'll be putting in chargers that are over 50 kW and something that enhances that customer's experience even more. So they can charge and they can get back to what they're traveling for business.
So in your home, it would be about 3 or 4 kW. The level 2s you've been referring to are 7 to 10, and the fast chargers are 50.
Correct.
And a fast charger is level 3.
Yes.
So a home charger is level 1.
Mm-hmm. Home charger is usually considered just your basic outlet, a level 1 is your basic outlet, just 120 volts. And level 2 would be that 240 volts, and now you're talking that 3, 4 kW in the home.
Okay. So this is Matthias. I'll just to add there, to be very clear, level 1 and level 2 are AC versus the direct current fast chargers are DC. It's a common distinction in the EV community.
Thank you, Matthias.
Jason, I'm sure you heard her previously when I brought up the fact that it sounds like in some of these instances, customers will end up subsidizing EV users. This, from what you described, it seems like that would actually directly apply to what AutoTail is envisioning. I mean, would you disagree with that?
So the way I look at it is EV drivers are mobile electric consumers. And so, for example, the individual rugby that was driving his electric vehicle, he was driving in Minnesota, likely paying, XL or AutoTail or someone else in Minnesota as that individual traveled. And you'll have outstate drivers doing the same thing in North Dakota. But you're right. Initially, because of the volumes, it's likely that the revenue from charging in the first couple years will likely not, pay for the capital infrastructure. And that's why you have not seen a private investment at all in this case. Now, AutoTail, the way we look at that is we have an obligation to serve. And we believe that we have customers out there that need this service, and we want to make sure that we provide a network for those customers. Not all of our customers pay their fair share of costs. Some customers, as you are very aware of, some customers have higher costs than probably the revenues that we receive, and vice versa. And this would be another example of that.
I think it makes more sense to me when you were just saying that the EV user is the extension of the residential class. But along with that line, wouldn't it make sense? I mean, granted, there may be some places that are going to fall through the cracks. But wouldn't it make sense for AutoTail, if they are looking to extend this, and if there is going to be some sort of subsidization, to limit that by only putting in probably the areas that are more likely to actually recover the costs and in a shorter time frame?
No, absolutely. We can, we look at, like, our Minnesota plan is it's for your pilot, and so we're gonna probably focus on the higher volume communities first, and then build that out. And so I see North Dakota probably being a multi-year plan as well, and that's still another couple years away, likely. And so. So it's likely we're going to focus on those communities first, and then the other areas will follow. But I think it's important to recognize, too, that what we're talking about here is a network. And maybe not all chargers get utilized as much as we'd like on the network, but having those chargers all there makes that network, you know, a strong network. Otherwise, it's no longer a network. And so we want to make sure that customers in wherever corner of the state that there are, that they have access to charging. Now, if Volkswagen dollars develop one of these communities that we would look at developing, we would definitely not develop that community and put duplicate services in. We're just trying to make sure that we are making sure, you know, everyone has equal access to those charging options in proximity to those, to you know, where they live.
Sure. I'm sorry. Just to back it up, we said, did I misunderstand you? Did you say that if there would be a charging station in one of those communities, that you guys probably would not be looking then to have a charging station there?
Yeah, so for example, is in Minnesota, the Volkswagen dollars are likely going to develop a charging station in Carlstead, Minnesota, very northwest Minnesota. And we had identified that as a community that was the very, you know, northern part of our service territory. It likely needed a charger. And so if the Volkswagen dollars do develop that site, we would not develop that and have a duplicate of services there. Now, there are cases like a Bemidji that's a larger community, similar to a Jamestown in North Dakota, where there is a DC fast charger in Bemidji. But likely Bemidji, and, you know, and looking at some of the interest in our customers from Bemidji, they're going to need more than one fast charger. And if you look at Tesla, they put in 8 in Jamestown. And so a community like Jamestown is likely going to need more than one DC fast charger, you know, doubles like Wahpeton. There's going to be a couple that likely need more. But, you know, in smaller communities, they likely don't need more than one.
Sure. I guess it's just kind of it's a unique situation where when I'm thinking about it, that you're looking expanding and having charging stations in certain areas, and you have subsidization, and so essentially you have a greater opportunity for cost recovery, or ensuring that you have cost recovery on these, and you're saying that you may encourage, you're allowing other charger stations come in by offering the same rate. However, I would imagine by you being a first mover and putting it there that you would actually be discouraging the additional investment if they'd be competing with you. And so it seemed like that would, in a way, possibly stifle the private investment. And I understand there are certain places probably where you need additional chargers, but if it's really a good investment, they would probably do that on the front end, and they would probably be taking a higher risk by going to a certain area without that opportunity of subsidization that you would probably be able to receive from other customers.
Yeah, excellent question. You know, there's different ways of looking at this. You know, the experience is more than just the price the driver pays. And so it might be that the network or the application that they're using and the convenience through that app. It might be that they're a Tesla driver and they're going to use the Tesla stations. It might be a location that, you know, there's another, you know, at a charge point or whoever might be out there developing a site, that they get a better location, they provide a better experience. And so there's other factor than just price that customers are likely looking at, you know, for their charging needs. Yeah, and like I said, you know, some communities will need more than one charger.
Sure. So, but I guess if you took away from the aspect of, I mean, you did a good job explaining the network, and you did a good job, I feel, explaining how it's an extension of the customer.
Sorry, I can't hear you.
I'm sorry about that. If one would view that an EV customer is not the extension of the customer class or fully take that viewpoint, it would seem like there would probably be some sort of policy opposition to, encouragement of a utility extending into these more rural areas. I mean, would you agree with that? I mean, you're talking about a broader customer experience.
Can you
talking
one
about
more time, please?
Sure. If one would view, and hypothetically from a policy viewpoint, that the EV customer is not an extension of the residential class, and they would make that separation. And if you're not looking at it from that view of the broader network, that it probably would not make a lot of sense then to encourage a utility then to extend to these areas in, with charging stations and engage in that business. I mean, would you agree if you took it from that standpoint as opposed to, I know, I understand your viewpoint.
Okay, so if I understand the question, you're saying if the EV, let's just say public DC fast charging, if those are on their own standalone class, mm-hmm. and they needed to cover, if they needed to, we needed to charge rates that were to cover all the investment over 5 years or something like that, let's say levelized, that you're saying it wouldn't make cost-effective sense? Is that the question?
I guess it kind of goes up that vein, yeah.
Right. And, you know, I think a lot of it is to be determined. When we look at the modeling and we put in certain scenarios that are based on national modeling in different areas, that it pencils out and it actually stands alone and it is cost effective, those investments that we're making and the rates that we're charging. Now, you know, there are scenarios also that maybe this doesn't take off as fast as some of us think it will. And in those cases, there would be a subsidy. So there is scenarios, you know, if some of the stuff takes off, like some of us believe it will, it will pay for itself. Now, we do know this. If we don't invest anything, it won't happen. I mean, and we can see that. Or if it does happen, it'll be just in Jamestown. For Otter Tail, it'll be just Jamestown, North Dakota, and that's pretty much it.
Sure.
You know, and it'll be more challenging for customers.
How about to the extent that, say, I mean, it seems like you have a lot of confidence this will eventually pay for itself. If it was not a non-rate-based investment and the company did not, you know, ask for recovery through the rates and would provide this as a standalone operation and investment, I mean, would the company still likely go forward with that? Would they take that risk?
That's a good question. That's something that we'll have to decide. We haven't had that specific conversation internally. I agree, it is a risk. We will be looking at our Minnesota filing and if that gets approved or not on August 27th to see if that doesn't get approved, to see if that's still something we want to move forward with or not. We believe that there's good merit there and we believe that it will be approved in Minnesota. You know, in North Dakota, you know, we'll have to look at the timing of that. It might be that, you know, in a couple of years from now that it's a lot clearer picture, but that's a tough one to answer right now, unfortunately.
Jack,
I
have a question too, but go ahead, Brian.
Earlier in the presentation, I'm just trying to, so I understand, you said long-term Otter Tail does not plan to own and operate EV charging stations, but I'm getting more of a sense that it sounds like you're going to be more aggressive than maybe how I interpreted that statement. So from a modeling standpoint, timing standpoint, do you look at this, and I know it's very fluid, is this a 3 year, is it a 5 year, in the short term before it moves over to what you'd consider long term?
Yeah. In Minnesota, what we're looking at is probably about 5 years. And after 5 years, what our plan there is what we've discussed anyways, is that we would try to ensure that the site host is a good site host and wants that project to succeed. What we don't want to do is sell the project to the site host and then the thing just falls apart and now we have a situation where there's a gap in service. And so we want to make sure it's a good site host. And what we would do is, if we go ahead and sell that Minnesota network, then we'd credit the customers back any proceeds that we would get from that sale. But that's something that we're looking at likely doing in Minnesota, that if we see EVs taking off and the charging volumes are getting higher, that, you know, after 5 years, we would likely try to hand those, or sell those, I should say, to those site hosts and credit the customers back that paid for those.
Okay, thank you.
Thanks. I have two questions. Well, maybe three. One of them is, can only Teslas charge at a Tesla charging station? Or can any EV charge at a Tesla?
Teslas are only, they're proprietary, and they're only for Teslas.
Okay.
Similar to like Apple Lightning cable.
Sure. All right. I just was curious about that. I figured, but I wasn't sure. One question. What does this electric vehicle demand, what does that mean for you guys in additional business? So, like, set aside all the policy goals and, you know, maybe, because maybe North Dakota legislators do or don't agree with the overall policy of improving and increasing electric vehicle usage. Just from a business standpoint, what does it mean to you guys in terms of potential future demand growth?
Oh, yeah, thank you. Good question. We don't see it, at least in the near future, as some large demand growth opportunity in that we're going to have to build a bunch of infrastructure. You know, one of the things that we're doing with our proposal in Minnesota is the time differentiated rates that may, you know, push some of that usage to off-peak periods as well. But we don't see this impacting any kind of, you know, generation needs or anything like that or even distribution upgrades for that matter, for a very long time. We don't, in our modeling, we don't see that happening, you know, at least for 10 years.
Okay. Then I'm curious why you're so interested in making these networks available, but that's kind of aside. If it isn't to increase demand or see a long-term benefit to your business growth. But it strikes me, I'm struggling with if 80% of the charging is going to and is now and in the future going to occur in the residential locations, is there a big risk that we're going to overbuild this public network to the point where the technology is going to advance, the most users will be using, you know, for long trips, the interstate systems and, you know, the main roads where these networks will exist for charging when you're going, you know, across multiple states. And then the rest of this infrastructure is kind of wasted because the people in the small towns and other areas are mostly charging at home once they adapt them. So is there a big call or need that we know exists for, you know, charging stations, public charging stations in lots of little towns?
Well, I think without a network like this, and we refer to it as a minimal network, I think without a network like that, then you just won't have that EV adoption. And I think Matthias talked a lot about earlier in his conversation about just the benefits of electric vehicles. And what we try to do is provide not a lot of duplicative services. When you look at those blue circles, you know, not a lot of overlap. We're really trying to maximize covering our communities. And we're trying to make it consistent with federal guidance as well. As chargers within that 50 to 70 miles of our customers. And so when you think about other states and the investments that they've made, there's a lot more chargers on interstates and in other U.S. highways. And so we do believe that this is a minimal network that we're proposing here. We do believe that now the costs, obviously there's costs that come along with it, but the impact, we believe that those costs are appropriate. And so we don't see that there's, you know, stranded investments or anything like that. We definitely work to make sure that the equipment that's being installed isn't obsolete, you know, in the near term, and that it maybe, you know, we're looking at some that as far as there's modules that you can actively configure as demand grows or volume grows in those areas. So there's a lot of different things that we can do on that side and science side as well.
Okay, good. Thank you. And I didn't want to, I maybe misstated my sense of the policy position in North Dakota that exists today. I don't think that there's a lot of people who don't like the idea of electric vehicles. I think the question is, how much should public dollars and public policy be incentivizing it and paving the way for it versus letting it happen, you know, naturally through the competitive arena. So I just wanted to clarify that.
Thank you, Gretchen. And just my last slide here, and you know, I'm not going to read through it here, but these are some of the pilot goals here, you know, as far as just filling that gap where the private markets fail. We want to build technology awareness for our customers, you know, mitigate range anxiety, talk about that too, making sure that there's a consistent network out there that's familiar for customers. Then we want to gain an understanding too and see, you know, time of rates work for EV drivers, or is it some other methodology for charging them work better? And then overall, we want to educate customers and car dealerships, and we want to make sure that there's opportunities for North Dakota to sell that Chevy Bolt too, and that the customer doesn't have to drive to Minneapolis and they can buy one right in Jamestown. Currently, we don't have any dealerships that sell electric vehicles in North Dakota, and we only have one dealership in our service territory, Minnesota, that sells electric vehicles. So we see that there's opportunity here to really educate our customers and partners, and there's this opportunity to advance some of these technologies. And that, I can answer any questions.
In terms of feedback, because I would imagine our take and approach on this would influence the direction you want to go, or from a rate recovery standpoint, or what are possibilities? I don't know how to frame it up, but on a scale of 1 to 10, with 10 being very pressing, 1 being not pressing at all, how quickly are you looking for feedback from us?
Yeah, I think this is the beginning of that conversation, and so I'm not looking for feedback immediately. You know, I see this beginning of the conversation, and as we see, you know, different things the legislature does, different things that different North Dakota DOT does, and I think we keep on having this conversation, and I think, you know, like XL as well, and us, you know, we come back and say, here's some of the lessons that we've learned in other states, and just to make sure that we right size and we provide the right solution for our customers in our product.
Okay. I just wanted to make sure that we weren't holding up a pressing aspiration that the company has with location, a spot, whatever it might be.
Thank you, Jason. Appreciate the conversation today.
Thank you.
Thank you as well.
One, this is Matthias Bell at Excel Energy. One question I didn't follow up on from Commissioner Federcheck. I thought it was a very good question about the overall landscape for EVs. Your question pertaining to the costs and are the costs worth investing in. Colorado is a very different market for us than North Dakota. I do think an aspect of the Colorado EV legislation is interesting to think about in the context of all the states we've heard, which is really looking at EV's revenues collectively and comparing that to the revenue requirements for serving that. And things like Jason's talking about with public charging, by adding more public chargers, there's likely to be more revenue coming from that. And I think the big public policy question is, do those revenues offset the revenue requirements associated with this infrastructure, not just on an individual customer basis, but in some cases, another lens, if you look at that from an overall EV perspective.
Mm-hmm.
Sure. Makes sense.
Yeah, agree.
And I think we also might have Carly McLeod, and I'm not sure if she has anything to interject in the discussion as well. Do we have her online?
Looking, I do not see.
Okay.
Okay, maybe she can. I would just personally invite you all to stay in touch on this. If you come across information or studies or ideas or whatever that can help us learn more and stay on top of this, I certainly welcome just having that, you know, forwarded via email or mail or however you would like to do that. Just I think that would be very helpful because you guys are on the front lines dealing with this every day, and we really aren't.
Commissioner Zach Smith is on the line. He and Carly have sort of been tag teaming those meetings with the DOT. Zach, I don't know if you want to make any comments. Zach represents the cooperative side, but I think a lot of our interests are the same. Zach, are you able to add anything?
Thanks, Mark. No, I don't think I have a lot to add at this time, but I know Carly was able to take in most of this meeting. She had a conflict on her calendar today, but I will pass along, and Mark and the rest of the utility working group will continue to discuss this and discuss the meeting you guys had today, and I appreciate all the comments and interest in this topic, and appreciate commissioners and Jack working with us as we all kind of feel our way through this.
Very good. I don't have anything more.
All right. Well, thank you, everyone. Greatly appreciate the dialogue and your time. And we are adjourned. Thank you.
Thanks, everyone.